What is up, everybody, and welcome to the tailgate. This is Tailgate Talks, and tonight we are recording. It is Wednesday, October 23rd, and you're listening to episode number 238. We've got unfortunate Texas Tech Baylor game to recap. Not going to be fun to dive back into that one. It was a rough one on Saturday, but we do have that to discuss. And we have a TCU game to preview, the Battle for the Saddle in Fort Worth this upcoming weekend. So, lots to discuss this episode. If you listen to us, you know the drill. We're going to stop doing the follow us all stuff in our intros by this point. You know where to follow us. Hopefully you are following us. We'll get all that stuff down to the end. So we just got a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's go ahead and get into it with this week's episode.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go.
Well, Saturday came and went. We took last week off as a bye week, and so did the Texas Tech football team. They took a two bye weeks, it seems like. They did not show up. It was a big opportunity for the Red Raiders at the Jones on homecoming. A pretty good crowd at the Jones. A chance to go 6-1 overall, go 4-0 in Big 12 conference play. Really set yourself up. Texas Tech fans feeling confident about ourselves heading in this one. And then, like I said, just didn't show up. No energy from the get-go, really. I even thought the run out into the game kind of lacked some energy. Felt like the team just thought Baylor was going to roll over because you're supposed to win this game. And Baylor was the only team that showed up and played a full four-quarter game. Dominated Texas Tech on both sides of the ball, on the line of scrimmage, on offense, on defense, all three sides of the ball, and special teams as well. And hand the Red Raiders their first loss in Big 12 conference play this season, first loss at home this season, and really just kind of decimate the fan base after this game of, all the highs that we had kind of just right out the door with this one. Pretty brutal Saturday for all of us Red Raider fans. How you feeling now that we are several days removed from that 59-35 loss to the Baylor Bears?
Yeah, well explained there of everything that happened or didn't happen Saturday for us. We played like ass all the way around.
the butt bowl, so we had to play like ass.
The energy part was weird. Like no one felt like no one came to play, like besides Taj. And yeah. That's like no one was trying to play is kind of like what it felt like. It was very weird. No one was hyped up or trying to do something even after like the terrible start. Like it was just bad. And after coming off bye week, that's very disheartening when bye weeks are, you got healthy. So you did that part, right? I mean, yeah. That part's the easy part. But the preparation was horrible. And like, this is by far your most awful, like preparement game that you've had this year from what it looked like. And it was just all around god awful. I can't imagine what the stands looked like by the end of that, because we left with about 12 minutes left. A lot of fans filtered out at the end of the third quarter. We stayed for like one or two more drives to see, more disappointment. And, I just hope that the coaching staff and players kind of see this as a wake-up call and use it, because it can be useful that no team's just going to walk in here and let you beat them. You have to do all these things at a better, higher level, like to beat these. And like you were saying how fans were high going into this game, and they were, we should have been. And the really disappointing part when you're doing the outlook of the season is like, this was your probably most winnable game on paper for the six you have left. I mean, home game, team should be worse than you. All those things were lining up for you and you, how you were looking. So that's what sucks. You kind of fumbled that opportunity and really got your ass kicked.
Yeah, I had this as like the game I was like least concerned about all the rest on the schedule. Like this is a 2-4 Baylor team, a team that like sure has been in some of the games that they've lost, but still they just haven't looked like a good football team. And you come to this game after a bye week, you're feeling all good, and they're just the lack of preparation for this game is alarming. The lack of adjustments made during the game was, I think, super alarming.
Just the lack of attention in general.
Yeah. The special teams, like, usually is one of your units that's on par. There's a shanked punt with a punt return that almost went for a touchdown.
Squib.
Squib kick that you couldn't just fall on the ball, turn it over, give Baylor. Like, you set Baylor up two times in just great field position because of special teams blunders. And offense, I thought, was very lackadaisical to get started in this game. You get ball first, and you're like, all right, and then you don't do anything. You punt. You get a stop on the first Baylor possession, get the ball back, don't do anything again, and punt the ball. And every time you had an opportunity to go try to make it a game or grab a lead, you ended up punting. Just frustrating all around. Highly concerning from this coaching staff. Like, this is Texas Tech football. From this coaching staff and this team, it just felt like they thought that they deserved to win this game. And the highly concerning thing to me is, you're Texas Tech. You haven't done anything in the last decade plus to act like you just deserve to win a game because you're 5-1 on the year. Like, you've got to show up every game. You've got to earn that. You know, you've not that even when you win games a lot, you can just do that. It's just a lot of concerning stuff from this game, I thought. And this is the first time I really kind of questioned. I was like, all right, is Joey the guy that can like get us there? Oh, yeah, you know, and I know Leach lost some games like this that you definitely thought that you're like, oh, you're supposed to win this game. I remember losing to terrible Oklahoma State.
He always lost
terrible Colorado teams.
Colorado's and Missouri's, the black and yellow teams, really bad.
Yeah, but he had some other bad losses into like Oklahoma State at one point when they had only won like 3 or 4 games in a year. You know, so he had those moments. I'm not saying like every coach is perfect. We've seen Alabama lose to Vandy this year. But at home, like, I just like to do that at home is probably the more embarrassing thing to me. I've seen a lot of people discussing what's the most embarrassing loss of the Joey McGuire era. You got Wyoming up there, the Texas beat down. But like, where does this rank for you in kind of terms of embarrassing losses for Joey McGuire? Because this is pretty up there for me, just considering the kind of team you've been this year. I know Baylor is more of a quality opponent than Wyoming was, and you definitely should have beat Wyoming last year, and that was pretty embarrassing. But where you're at this season with the expectations that you have and the chance of really controlling your own destiny to just come out of a bye week and flop like that, just pretty disheartening.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, this was a game you could have kind of changed your culture type stuff, like, going from the last group to and coaching staff to this group and like how we do things and that kind of thing. I saw it posted with like this Wyoming game and the Baylor 2 years ago game.
Yeah. And this,
I'd say this one's way worse than both of those. And the Baylor game 2 years ago, you were in it until the fourth quarter and literally like just 2 or 3 plays went the wrong way. And
yeah,
it just
flipped at
it flipped on you quick. It didn't look as bad as the score was. This one was ass kicking from the beginning. This one in like Texas last year.
You were in this game. It was a 3-point game in the third quarter. And then after that, that's when things just fell apart.
But it never felt like that in the first half. I mean, you got there a couple times, but all the weird goofy stuff that was happening, you were never in it. You just didn't have the energy. You can say what the score is. That's kind of like what the Cliff days were.
Yeah.
Oh, you were in it. You only lost by 7. Yeah, but we were down 10-14 the whole game. Like, that's how this game felt. And like,
but
you
even
in
at
it.
The end, you lost by 24.
And I mean, it's up there with that Texas game. But I mean, even that game, you could make the excuse that they were just way better and we didn't play our best defensive player in that game. Like this one, you got your ass kicked by an equal or lesser opponent.
Yeah, for me, you know, the Texas game was really bad, but yeah, like you said, Texas was just such a better team at that point in the season than from we are. This one, I just think because I don't think Baylor is that good of a football team, and you just let them dominate you. Like, your defense didn't do crap in this game, and we'll get into both sides of the ball here, and there's a lot of people who are going to blame Kittley, but, I mean, your defense couldn't get a stop to save their lives when you needed it, them to. You know, you get a touchdown kind of right before half, and you know, it's under 2 minutes. If you can get a stop there, that'd be great. You go to half down three, and they get the ball instead. They drive the length of the field and get a touchdown right before half. That was a killer. Then, you know, you come down, make it a 3-point game in the third, and then right after that, it's touchdown. They force a stop, and then it's a touchdown, a pick, and a touchdown, and then just like that, the game was just completely over and out of hand. And so it snowballed pretty quickly there for you in the third. Let's get into the offensive side of the ball a little bit more, and then we'll talk about the defensive side of things. Every loss is going to draw out the Kittley haters, and we're obviously not big time Kittley supporters. I didn't think this was a terrible Kittley game. I didn't think it was great either. It's just kind of the Kittley game that I guess I've come to expect from him. He doesn't have the type of offense that can keep up with teams that are going to go put up 50 points on you. Like when Baylor puts up 59, he can't keep up with that. This offense isn't built to come back. It isn't built for that. It's built to get a lead and hold on to the lead. Hopefully that's really all I think he's kind of good at. And this was kind of the pure example for me. The frustrations with Kittley are kind of the have to have it drives. He's just never been able to do that. You get the ball to start the game, like I mentioned, don't score. You get it stopped, luckily. You get the ball back, don't score there. So that is two opportunities to grab a lead at home that you didn't do. Then Baylor finally scores, but you match it, so it's 7-7. You get another stop, and now you have another opportunity to go grab a lead, and you can't do it there. Those are the frustrating things to me. It's like, all right, man, we got to go get a lead, and I just have no confidence in him. What were your thoughts on Kittley in this game and any of the discourse around him after this game?
Yeah, the discourse should, you know, fire back up after this one. I can't blame those people. It looked a lot like last year's offense.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing. Like, we had last year's offense because we didn't have weapons and the guys. And we just had to do what we could, makeshift, make it work kind of thing. We have way better players and dudes this year. And to have to resort back to that playbook, whatever you want to call it, style, was god-awful. And, I mean, besides the garbage time stuff when we already weren't there and we was blowout, like there was zero explosive plays, no attempts at them. Like we weren't trying anything down the field from what I could tell.
Yeah.
And that's what we were stuck with last year too, is because we just didn't have any guys to do that. Like Caleb Douglas was trying his best to, you know, catch some balls and make some plays, and that's about it. Like,
yeah, it's dink and dunk to Josh Kelly. Like, we're not getting him any balls down the field. You've got to get him on a screen or something, a short, intermediate.
Teams are sniffing that out because of how much we've used it so far.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, besides the run to Taj and hope he can do something, it was piss poor. And, like, that's, like, I don't even know, like, because that's how I can compare it. It looked like last year's team was out there again on offense.
Yeah, it's a very odd game because, like, some of the plays, it was like, wow, what a play call. Like, the trick play with Jalen Conyers throwing
hold on,
the pass.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we got to talk about that because
so 2 minute warning comes.
Yeah.
We're at, like, the 3-5 yard line. I don't know.
No, it was, let's see.
Seven, something like that. We're inside the 10 or so. Like, we're right there.
It was at the 20 yard line. It was at the 20 yard line. 20. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you were having a discussion because we were, what, down 10 at that point?
We're down 10 with 2 minutes left and an opportunity to kill some time here.
So we're like, hey, this would be a great spot to kill some time. I know we need the points. And I was like, Kittley's probably going to go deep in his bag and just score the first play.
Yeah.
And of course he does. And it was a great play.
It was a really cool play.
Great, great play. But the fact that we ran it there and not like – you know, 4, 5, 6 plays later, at once we got first down, like a minute and a half of that 2 minute clock killed, that'd be way better timing. Like, we only killed 4 seconds of that clock.
Yeah.
And it's, and like, God, the situational awareness there. Come on.
Yeah, that was something that I don't think many people around us agreed with, but we were just kind of like, of course we're going to score the very first play. And then now they have a minute and 56 seconds to go down and score. And the situational awareness of that is that they get ball after half. So they go score, they get the ball right back. And so that was our, like, you've got to kill some clock there. I don't, Joey's got
to
be.
People need to play college football on their PlayStation to learn these things.
Joey's got to be, that's a Joey thing. I don't think that's necessarily Kitley. Joey's got to be, hey, we've got
to
take.
It needs to be awareness from everybody. But yeah, Joey does need to mention that. Hey, let's not score right away.
Yeah, we need to get this down to under a minute here. And then whatever we get, field goal or touchdown, at least it's a one score game. And you're not potentially blowing it up to where, you know, if they score a touchdown at the end and then another touchdown, it's now a three possession, another touchdown to start the half. It's now a three possession game, just like that. And so that was frustrating. Cool play, like the handoff to Conyers, Conyers with a dime. But yeah, I think like that situational awareness there has got to be much better. Like you and me can't be there as college football 25 players and be like, yeah, we should have ran another minute and a half of clock off there. And instead, you know, and luckily, you know, they come down and score, and luckily you're able to get a stop at the first of half, but and keep it a possession game after that. But you know, that's frustrating. And to me, it's the way the game started. I think you and me were talking on that first possession. It's like Baylor's going to sell out on Taj. What do you got dialed up pass game? Because you're going to have to score in the pass game to open up stuff for Taj. Because they were just
absolutely
completely like,
nothing.
All right, and it was nothing. First two drives, it was just nothing. 6 plays, 20 yards, 6 plays, 8 yards on the first two drives. And it was like, all right, you got Taj a little bit of space. But the only way you're going to get Taj going is if you pass the ball a little bit. And finally, like, you were able to do that and get Taj some running room. But they came out and they were like, all right, we're going to make Barron beat us. And that was a good game plan for them, and it worked out. But, you know, Barron, when you look at the stats, not completely terrible. He's 33 of 49 for 286 yards, 3 touchdowns. Horrible pick. He had a horrible pick. What'd you think of?
Horrible pick. Also good play by that corner to drop and go get
it.
It's like, but it was also, there's two sides to that. He forced it. He airmailed it, looked coy down, forced it. And then it's just a good play on the other half.
It was a good play on the other half, but it was also, you had one wide receiver on that side of the field, and they had two DBs over there, and yet you're trying to force it to Coy in that situation. Made no real sense to me. It feels like, for some reason, when Kitley, like, has 3 or 4 guys spread out on one side, it's like, hey, let's attack the guy who's all by himself on the other end, when it's like, I get some of the distraction you're trying to do there, but anyway, what'd you think about Barron's performance on Saturday? Felt like just the Barron we're used to, I guess.
I mean, mediocre is probably a good word for it. I mean, I don't know if it's all Kitley and what he's calling and telling Barron to do, or if it's just Barron not seeing stuff, or like going to Coy when that's all he wants, you know, security blanket type stuff. But like, it's pretty mediocre. I mean, you can't really say anything else about it when we're not trying anything down the field. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know what percentage, like you said, I don't know if it's 70-30 Kitley, maybe it's 60-40 Kitley.
Yeah, I'd
maybe
like
it's,
to know.
Like, I would like to know. I've been on this hill for a while with Barron. I just don't think he's I think he's a game manager quarterback who can win you games like the Arizona game, who can win you games like the Arizona State game. But in games like where you need him to step up and lead some drives, I don't think he's that guy for you. Like, he might have it every now and then, but for the majority of times, it's kind of like this Baylor game where it's just, I don't see it from him. And I didn't see the energy there or the confidence to go down and score. And especially when you needed important drives, that I was always just like, oh, this isn't going to be good. And of course, like, the backbreaking drive of the game is when he throws that pick.
Yep.
And
that was by far the biggest swing of the game. Like, you still had a chance.
Yeah.
Before that, but, and then after that, it was, you were toast.
Most embarrassing part of the game for me, Dustin, was in between that third and fourth quarter when, and I tweeted this out, we're playing swag surf down 17 at the end of the third quarter.
I got tagged in a couple tweets.
Oh my God. I've never been more angry in my life. Like, I don't know, fire everybody who's up doing the music and or whatever the sound like that. Yeah. Just read the room. Like, I know that's our,
you got to have a backup song.
Yeah. I know that's our third to fourth quarter thing is what we do. But when you're down like that in a game where you're just not playing well, like, you got
the whole Baylor bench and huddle was dancing to it. That made it look even worse.
Yeah. And they had the ball and then they go and score to start the quarter.
Yeah, that was stupid.
It's like, wow, got to have a better read on the room. It slightly lessens the impact of swag surf when you're playing it like that.
Don't diminish swag surf like that.
Yeah, you don't want to diminish something that gets the people going like that. Next time, I'm just going to be thinking, man, last time we played this, we were getting our ass handed to us. Like, I get sometimes you're trying to get the fans back into the game and have some momentum, but it was clearly lost in that game, and that game was not headed in the right direction at all. So that was one of my biggest frustrations. Defense was the other big frustration in this game. Defense was absolutely awful, giving up 59 points. Now, a couple of those were set up easily because of special teams blunders, easy field position for Baylor, but for the most part, the defense could not get stops, especially when he needed to in this game. What were your thoughts about the defense and a unit that we thought had maybe improved a little bit at the Arizona game, got healthy, and then all of a sudden has this kind of performance?
Yeah, holy crap, were they bad as well. Like, don't just blame Killy for this. Literally, all three phases were ass in this game. Yeah, I get, like, we gave up 10 points, and they only had to get, like, 20 yards off a couple of those in that first, second quarter because of those bad plays. But, I mean, we weren't doing anything on defense. Mm-mm. And we were literally just rushing three and dropping eight and letting Baylor run the ball up us. And that's, we haven't given that kind of run game up all year.
And just Sawyer, for clarification, we gave up 255 yards on the ground.
Yeah. And that was the actual running backs, not a quarterback just getting loose.
Yeah.
And then, speaking of quarterbacks, Sawyer Robinson just diced us up however he wanted as well.
Everything was easy.
It was all up front. You mentioned in our opening, like, the O-line got their ass kicked. The D-line did absolutely nothing and was getting their ass kicked. We had, I said it during the game, I don't know how you get negative pressure on a quarterback, but we were.
Yeah. It's the only way to describe it is, like, we're actually negative pressure. Like, whatever that is.
We're getting negative pressure. We're still at the line of scrimmage. We're not even, like, a yard or two deep. We're
getting,
still,
like,
there.
Pushed back. I think we're getting pushed back. I think we're, like, starting at the line of scrimmage, but then we're 2 yards back.
And like, I don't get it. Like, I know we haven't rushed the passer well this year, but, like, I thought the last couple weeks we found something.
Arizona game, we
were creating pressure and bringing some pressures from certain linebackers or whatever it may be, and we just didn't want to do that this game.
Yeah, that made no sense to me.
Like, we did more of the Washington State game type stuff, and it's gone the same way. Like, they just diced us up however they wanted. So, like, that's the first fix, is we just got to find, like, at this point, I don't care if it's, we have decent and good enough defensive backs to leave them hanging. I would rather rush five every time and let those guys, CJ and Mo Horn, and them figure it out back there.
Yeah. You can't just let the quarterback sit there. And that's the most frustrating thing to me is, like you said, I thought we had turned a corner. And, like, sure, you only had two sacks against Arizona, but, man, you were hitting Fifita, like, time after time after time. It was like, all right, we can do stuff like that. That's going to be exciting, and that's going to create turnovers. And then, you just did the complete opposite of that. The baffling decisions made by this coaching staff that – that this wasn't prepared for, and that once they were dicing us up, you didn't make any adjustments to start doing it. You were just content with them moving the ball downfield on you. And never showed any signs. This was back to the ACU game, Washington State game, of just like not really feeling any hope for this defense. After they had shown a couple signs of like, all right, we have a little bit of life with this defense. And then,
and especially, like I pointed it out during our tailgates and stuff, like nobody on this Baylor team scared you. They didn't have a stud. They don't have a Scadabo at running back or a McMillan at quarter receiver. They're not a Fafita type quarterback. Like, you've been playing way better players and teams than this the last 3 weeks. And so, like, to get crushed like that from regular dudes sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Just embarrassing performance from them. No takeaways, no sacks, no tackles for loss, negative pressure. That's what that means. And he gave up 274 yards passing, 255 yards rushing. Just a completely abysmal performance. And yeah, a performance like that's going to make it really hard on the offense when they feel like they have to score every time. And like I mentioned, that's not Zach Kittle's offense. It's not, it's not built to do that. And so ultimately just kind of the perfect combination for Baylor to walk into the Jones and get a dub over Texas Tech and embarrass us and really just kind of knock the fan base back. But this is what we should have come to expect. We are Texas Tech fans, and every time we start getting a little ahead of ourselves, I think when I'm on Twitter and I see people saying we're going to the Big 12
everybody wanting us ranked,
I think every time anybody does something like that, that just guarantees us a stupid loss like this. Like, people gotta shut up. Just shut up with the confidence. And there's so much shit talking Baylor fans too. I just like, we're never like big shit talkers to other fan bases, because I think we are too scared from the Texas Tech side of things, where it's just like it always comes back to bite us. This is exactly why. And so brutal performance. That means no Club Red is open for this week. Some stats, and then we'll, because we weren't on last week, we did text each other our predictions, so we'll go through what we predicted. But stats, as I mentioned,
those will be awful.
Yeah, those were not good. Barron was 33 of 49 for 286 yards, three touchdowns and an interception that I mentioned. Taj, another just Taj Brooks day, 25 carries, 125 yards, his 18th career 100-yard rushing game and a touchdown. Solid game from him, as you've come to expect. Caleb Douglas, I thought, was really good for you in this game. He's been your leading receiver last two games now. 9 catches, 99 yards, 3 touchdowns for Caleb Douglas. So shout out to him. Josh Kelly, 9 for 76. Micah got a little bit more run in this game, but he only had 2 catches for 38. He did have a nice snag on the sideline, a one-handed snag. Where are you on the Micah movement that you kind of started to see on Twitter of like, you got to play Micah? I'm to the point now where I better fucking see him play some football. Like, he's better get 15 to 20 snaps, because at this point, like, what do you got to lose other than lose this guy to the transfer portal? And I think he's too talented to let go. I think at this point you're looking at your receiving core and you're not really doing much, so you got to shake things up a little bit, and I think you got to start playing him.
Yeah, I don't see what he can't give you that you're putting Dre McCray in for.
Yeah,
like, that's the spot I see him coming in at this point. And so, which you might get more of that this week with Dre McCray having a head injury.
Yeah.
And so it might be we don't cheer for injuries, unless you leave us and go to another team, but that might be your opportunity to get more Micah at this point.
Yeah. I just don't think there's an excuse anymore to not be playing him. I think at this point in the season, we've seen spurts of it from him, that he needs to be getting some run, because he opens up the field a little bit more for you, I think, and you are able to take a little bit more deep shots if you've got him in there. I mean, Coy's kind of disappeared over the last few games. You haven't really seen him be doing much. He's had more drops than I feel like he's had catches.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't know. I just give him a shot at this point, you know, especially if you have another bad performance this week. I'm like, what's the point of just keeping him on the sideline? Anyway, wanted to get on to that because that's another big topic going on right now at Red Raider Nation. rightfully so, though. I think the fans are kind of right on this one. Our predictions that we texted each other, I had Texas Tech with a 38-17 win. Dustin had a 37-20 win for the Red Raiders, so we both lose that. We both had Texas Tech covering -6, so we both lose that. Dustin had the over, so that's the one prediction we get right this week. But my score was just under, so I lose that one. Offense, I predicted, I said that Barron was going to throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. I was close, as he had 286 yards and 3 touchdowns. Dustin had Josh Kelly over 150 yards. That did not happen. I had a take 3 game on defense. That was not even anywhere close. Dustin had J-Rod forcing a turnover. That did not happen as well, as the Red Raiders did not have any turnovers. So that concludes Texas Tech and Baylor. It's time to transition now to the upcoming battle with the Texas Christian Horned Frogs and the battle for the saddle as the Red Raiders get set to head to Fort Worth for a 2:30 kickoff this Saturday. Injury update in the Baylor game due to Banks, one of your better interior defensive lineman, did go down with a season-ending injury in that game early on in that game. I think it was first quarter when that happened. So yet again, most of your injuries this season coming along the defensive line, and so maybe that is a reason why you're not getting much pressure there. You're losing a lot of depth, and I don't really think he had a lot of depth to begin with there. So that shifts our focus now to Texas Christian University Horned Frogs. They are 4-3 on the season, 2-2 in conference play. They are coming off a win over Utah last weekend. Utah, luckily, you know, one of the joys of Big 12 conference play so far is that Utah just fucking sucks right now. And they are, after their fans were so cocky. So that's fun to watch, and I'm pretty sure all Big 12 fans are enjoying that. But right now, Josh Hoover is their quarterback. He's thrown for 2,270 yards. So he's, I think he's like top 10 in the country in passing yards right now. Yeah. He's got 16 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He has 3 rushing touchdowns on the season. They are led by Cam Cook at the running back position. He has 349 yards on the season, 6 touchdowns lead the running back room. He is backed up by Jeremy Payne, who has 120 yards on the ground. Guy that, probably will be hearing his name called a lot. Their leading receiver, Jack Beck, has 748 yards receiving on the season, 7 touchdowns. He's their go-to guy at the wide receiver unit, but they do have 3 other receivers who have over 300 yards. So that's pretty spread out offense right there. JP Richardson's the second leading receiver on the team. He has 385 yards. Defensively for TCU, they don't force a whole lot of turnovers, as they've only forced 5 turnovers on the season, 4 interceptions, 1 fumble recovery. They do get to the backfield. They have 14 sacks on the season. And right now, they are giving up 164 yards rushing and 161 yards passing a game. So that's the TCU Horned Frogs for you. Dustin, what do you think about this upcoming matchup with the Horned Frogs on Saturday?
Yeah, TCU's sneaky good, I think. I had to look it up. They beat Utah last week 13-7.
Yeah.
I put a question mark by it because I was like, is that a real score in the Big 12 nowadays?
Yeah, it is, I guess. When you're playing Utah.
Very confused by that. So a lot of nothing happened in that game last week. But yeah, Hoover, he's a good player. I mean, if we let him stand back there like Sawyer Robinson or the Washington State quarterback, he's going to go for 500 yards on us easily. So, like, him and Jack Beck, they can turn it into something. But, like, yeah, they've just been turnover prone so far this year with 14, 6 picks and 8 fumbles. It's like, if they can just hang on to the ball, they're better than they look on, you know, win-loss record. So that's where I'm kind of concerned, is I don't think they're as bad as we think. Now they did lose to Houston pretty decently, so that's a bad loss. But again, turnovers killed them there. So we can just get the ball out of their hands. That's our key to win. Now, can we force some pressure and force Josh Hoover to speed things up is the question on our end, really.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at in this game is here's a quarterback who's thrown six interceptions. Here's a team that turns the ball over. Baylor is the only game you haven't forced a turnover. Your defense, like despite giving up yards, has found the opportunities to force turnovers, interceptions. And so maybe that's how your defense comes to play in this one, by forcing a couple interceptions. Seems like they have a bunch of guys who cough up the football, so that's good to for Jacob Rodriguez to get some punches in there and maybe poke a ball free and recover it. I think that's your best chance in this game is you got to force some turnovers, because if you're not forcing turnovers, like you said, you're not getting pressure. This is an offense that's going to throw the ball on you. And as we've seen time and time again, like, this is not a defense that can really stop the pass. Might be one of those you got to bend, don't break games where you've got to be better in the red zone, force them to some field goals. If you can do that, maybe you give yourself a chance here. But after watching us just get diced up by, I think, a lesser quarterback and Sawyer Robertson than Josh Hoover, it doesn't scream confidence for me that we're going to really be able to slow down the passing attack for TCU, which makes me pretty nervous heading into this one. Offensively, what do you think we can do? Do you think Kittley bounces back with the performance? Do you think Barron bounces back with a performance on offense this weekend that can maybe get you the victory on the road?
Yeah, I feel, again, like last year's team, we just came out of every, even wins or losses, like, we just didn't know what we were doing on offense. And so it's like, can we just get back to what we were doing, like, before the bye week in those couple games, like, that looked way better? I don't know what we were calling last week. So, like, get rid of that. Try some stuff. Maybe Micah gets some more run because Dre is out. I don't know. I would like us to take some shots a little bit. Jesus Christ. Like,
yeah,
these guys can run. We can do something for sure. Like, it's just baffling. Like, if we can't do something here, that's when you got to really start yelling at Kittley.
Yeah, to me, it feels like when we get the ball on offense, like, the field shrinks a little bit. Like, the spacing's not great. Like, you can't really scheme.
Yeah, because you don't throw the ball more than 15 yards. And you're not, like, picking at different parts of this field, I feel like.
Yeah. Like, I'm watching tons of football this year, like, college football, NFL. I'm like, man, there's these offenses are just, like, scheming these dudes wide open. And it feels like the field is so big for some of these offenses and some of the players that they have. And it just feels like it shrinks with Kittley. And, like, you've got talent there. You've got good wide receivers. You got Josh Kelly, Caleb Douglas, Micah Hudson, Coy Aiken. You've got good running backs like Todd. The tight end group. But they're only there to, like, help block, it seems like. And you're not getting those guys open. You're not using Jalen Conyers like when you did in week one, like against ACU, where I was like, oh, you're doing some pretty cool stuff with Jalen Conyers. That stuff's just completely gone out of the offense.
Sense with him.
Like, all you're doing with him is, like, little gadget plays now. And it's like, hey, he could be a really versatile tight end that you can use. And it's just not an option for us. So that's some of the frustrating things. It's like, you got to let the guy just go out there and play some ball and let open up the offense a little bit. Let Conyers do his thing. Let Josh Kelly do his thing. Let Micah go see what he can do for you. Like,
yeah, I feel like that could go for everybody. It's like the defense needs to be aggressive when they play.
Yeah.
And then offense needs to go out there and play a little more free and open and not so, like, both sides need to not be so rigid in, like,
yeah,
We have to do this on this play. Like, all right, the play should be here. Let's figure it out and let it flow.
I think it's just like, and maybe it starts from the Joey McGuire on this, but it just feels like we're so scared to mess up. You know, I listen to, like, Ryan Russillo a lot, and he's been having Todd McShay on, like, every Monday, and they talk about college football and they talk about quarterbacks. One thing they talk about a lot is, like, throwing interceptions and how it is deemed so, like, bad, but, like, how they love quarterbacks who will take the risk on throws to throw it down the field and aren't scared about throwing interceptions. And, like, that shows you more about a quarterback than quarterbacks who are scared and that won't risk throwing the ball. I just feel like Kittley and Barron, they're too scared to make mistakes. It's like, it's okay to make a mistake every now and then. We're not going to be pissed at you if you throw an interception for like attacking and going downfield. And I feel like they're just so scared to make those mistakes that they limit themselves and they don't attack because of those mistakes. And same on defense. They're so scared of giving up the big play. They're so scared of doing some of that stuff that they're just like, they're going to refrain from being the aggressive, like in CFB 25, when you create your coach, Dustin, and it has how aggressive do you want to be on offense and defense? I always like amp that crap up. Like I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to attack the field. I know this college football 25 isn't the same as real life football, but I think like they could benefit from opening things up and not being so scared of making a mistake. Like it's okay to make a mistake. Just show us a little bit that you're willing to attack and you're willing to
show me
like,
something.
Just show us something. And I think that's what's ultimately going to be the end of Kelly here is just he doesn't have that ability. He doesn't have that fearlessness to just be like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We got some playmakers. Let's go see what they can do. And, you know, like we said, not sure if it's Kittley, not sure if it's Barron, but both of them got to figure it out, get a little bit loose, get a little more loose on the offense, loosey-goosey, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. we kind of already talked about the defense on this one and what they're up against and the lack of confidence that we have after that performance in Baylor. So I think, for the most part, any other tidbits of this game that you're wanting to talk about?
No, I just hope I'm not as disappointed as I was at the end of last Saturday and you know, most of this week.
Yeah, I think everything has shifted on how I feel about this football team. I think, you know, I was starting to get the little excitement of, oh, maybe we could play in the Big 12 championship. Maybe they figured some things out. But this was a good game to get me back to reality of what this Texas Tech football team is. And it is a team that was outgained in all of those games that we won. And so it was bound to regress to the mean in that. And so now I can, you know, think more clearly on what this Texas Tech football team is. And I think you'll see that in my predictions. So let's go ahead and get to that. Texas Tech TCU Saturday at 2:30. Dustin, your final score prediction for this upcoming game.
Took me a little bit to look at it and think. I'm going to still go that we win this one 31-28.
31-28.
I'm just having some blind confidence in that we are more of the team we were in the first three games than the last game in the Big 12.
I'm going on the other end of that. I think what we were last game is probably more reflective of really who we are as a team. And I definitely don't want to get my expectations back up. And that way I'm not disappointed on Saturday if we do lose. And that way I'm, you know, excited if we do follow Dustin's score here and get that 31-28 win. I'm going with the 42-31 TCU victory. I think we are not going to be able to stop their offense. 42. I think Josh Hoover is going to be able to put up points. You just gave up 59 to Baylor at home.
Yeah.
I feel like you're not going to be able to keep up with their scoring. And if their passing offense is clicking, you clearly don't have the adjustments or players right now to figure that out. So that's why I'm going with TCU right now. The spread is TCU -6.5. So that means I am on the TCU side of this. Dustin, with his score prediction, is taking Texas Tech +6.5. Both of us, I am over. I think you are over. My math doesn't want to work real quickly here, but 31.
I'm at 59.
You're at 59, so you are on the under. So Dustin's going under. I am going over the 66.5 points over under total for this week. Offensive prediction, Dustin, what do you got for us?
Offensive, Sammy, you know, we talked before the show about going back to some basic answers here.
Yeah.
Because that loss really, really knocked us down on our picks. So I think I'm just going to go with a 100-yard receiving game. I'm not even going to pick a player at this point because – when I pick Josh Kelly, it's Caleb Douglas. When I pick Caleb Douglas, it's Jalen Conyers. So I'm just going 100-yard game from somebody.
Yeah, I think that's a good prediction. Yeah, like you said, basic. I could just go the Taj route, Taj over 100 yards and a couple touchdowns. I don't know. But I've had a few Micah predictions in there. I think, like, the heat's starting to rise on, like, you got to play him. Dre McCray's questionable. I think this is going to be Micah's biggest game as a Red Raider. I think you're going to see the most snaps for him and probably the most targets and receptions for him. I'm not going to put a number on there, but I'm just going to say Micah's best game as a Red Raider. That's going to be my prediction. Defensively, what you got? This is the hardest part. This
one is real tough because the negative pressure we had last week really sucked. And then because he had negative pressure, you couldn't get any turnovers. Yeah. So where do you go from there? You go back to your best player. I've done this one before, and it hit. I'm going back to the J-Rod route with 10-plus tackles. But I'll add in he has, like, an impact play in there, whether it's a pressure, a big time to tackle for loss, turnover, something like that. So 10-plus tackles and the impact play.
I like it. I'm also going to go just something simple as hold TCU under 350 yards passing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can do that if you let them run for 250.
Yeah, hopefully you hold them on the run game, but that's what I'm most nervous about in this game is the passing and allowing them to keep going over top on you and just break you down defensively with that. I have to really dumb down the defensive predictions because you can't predict sacks this year because we can't get sacks. It's hard to predict tackle for losses. Turnovers kind of been the one thing that we've been consistently decent at, but if you're not getting pressure anymore, it's going to be really hard to create turnovers. The quarterback has time to sit there and just find the open guy. So predictions getting tough there, but hopefully the Red Raiders bounce back. Hopefully Baylor was a wake-up call for this team to get back, to get some energy back on those sidelines, and hopefully they take it to Fort Worth and do Red Raider Nation proud and get a win over the TCU Horned Frogs in Fort Worth. It's been a while since we pulled off a victory there. Would be nice to do that Saturday afternoon. We hope you guys enjoy this week's watching of Texas Tech football. But before we get out of here for the week, Dustin, a final shot for us.
I saw a good question on the internet this week, and I wanted to discuss it with you.
Okay.
Who in your lifetime do you think you, like, what athlete do you think you have watched the most?
I think that's easy for me.
Yeah, I think it's LeBron for you.
It's LeBron. Because I've had 21 years of watching.
Yeah, he's still playing. I think for me it's like Dirk. Because I grew up, like, I don't watch as much NBA anymore as I used to. But, like, growing up, I mean, I was watching the NBA, and that's when Dirk and the Mavs are really good. And the Mavs are like my hometown type team. But I wanted to spin it to, like, Texas Tech. And who do you think?
Or just their time at Tech, or like their whole entire career?
Yeah. Because
if it's their whole entire career, it's going to be by far Patrick Mahomes. Because he's probably going to creep up on LeBron just because of how
Pat's
much.
Even up there just in general for football. Just because he played for a few years. You got to think of the guys that have played for quite a few years.
Yeah, like you would have to think like the 4-year guy.
Like, obviously, like Hutchings. But guys that are
Hutchings is probably up there a lot because he was a fifth year. Taj is up there. I think back to like older like Wes Welker because he was a 4-year.
For my time, yeah, I didn't really watch.
Wes was a 4-year.
Wes and them.
Talking about like quarterback position, it's going to be Graham.
Graham and
basketball.
Yeah, like I have a couple of names written down here.
I would say Norrence. Norrence would be because he was Norrence, here. He played probably more games
but
than I think.
I will push back on that just because from his like first to third year, I didn't really watch him.
I did though. I watched a lot of those.
For you, well, that sucks for you because we were awful then.
We were awful his first year, but his second year we made the tournament.
So I didn't really watch through some of those games, but like Culver's on the list there.
Culver's only 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's like.
So I have another one then that was a 4-year guy, mostly at Texas Tech. Kyler Edwards.
Yeah,
we watched him here for 3 years. And then he came and we watched him at Houston for a while, like even on TV. Still watched him a lot.
I think for me, like Norrence would be up there just because of the amount of games that he played. He was here for like 5 seasons and we were on some deep tournament runs. So you got to factor in that you're playing like we played 4-6, like 10 extra games just because of the tournaments. He did make the tournament 3 times as a player here too. And I would have to, it would be fun to get like the live stats on this. I remember one part of my take did that, like if you could just get stats on something like this would be fun to be like, all right, what's my stats? Andre Emmett would be pretty up there because Andre Emmett was here for 4 years.
Some of the better players through the, you know, 90s, 2000s eras that actually stayed for 4 years.
Yeah, and Andre Emmett's teams were about like before we had that period of where we sucked, were like as into Tech basketball as me and my dad like probably were up until, you know, 17, 18, 19 years, and kind of into now. And, you know, Andre Emmett was as fun a basketball player as I've ever gotten to watch in Tech. And we were watching all of his games. You had Big 12 tournament runs with him. You had a couple NCAA tournament runs with him. So he would, if I had to guess, if I could get the stats, I would say it's probably Andre one. Some of those guys back then too, because, you know, I watched a lot of, you know, you had more guys here for 4 years back then. I don't think you'll ever have another guy that's going to do that. But it'd probably be Andre and I think Norrence just because of the amount of games they played. You know, Keenan's probably up there too. Keenan, Justin Gray, Zach Smith.
Justin Gray, I think they're up there. Yeah.
So watched a lot of, like, I watched their entire careers. So those guys would probably be like top five of basketball, football, or interesting. I think, like, beyond. I think Mahomes is going to catch LeBron at some point just because their games are longer.
He might.
But yeah, that is an interesting topic. So, Ranger, do you have like any baseball or like any
Rangers? I was thinking about regular baseball, and it probably had to be like A-Rod because he was a Ranger there for a few years, and then, you know, he went to the Yankees, and he was the best player in baseball at that point. They were on all the time and playing really well, so he's probably up there. Like, I mean, I watched a lot of Pudge type games, and Michael Young probably be up there too.
Baseball for me would probably be Ortiz because
Poppy. That's
a lot of Red Sox games over his time.
A lot of time there too.
Yeah.
Thought that'd be a fun little experiment there.
It's fun to think about. It's fun to think about like each sport too, kind of specifically, and like especially over like the course of your life, and like what players kind of you've watched a lot of. I obviously like right now it's. Right now at this specific time, I'm watching more Patrick Mahomes than probably any other player just because I'm kind of locked into every Chiefs game. I'm not like really turning on most Laker games anymore. I watched last night to see Bronny and LeBron, which is going to be my final shot as first father son duo to play NBA minutes together. They checked in at the same time in the second quarter of the game last night. Pretty cool moment, but then was immediately just kind of like awkward after that because it was like, Bronny's clearly not up to that level, but you know, he wasn't terrible. He missed a wide open three. He got D'd up with Anthony Edwards at one point.
It was a little front
and it almost went in. But it's still pretty cool. Like just when you have the photos of LeBron and Bronny back when he was just a little kid and they see them sharing an NBA court together. It's pretty insane to see that. So I don't
get the people hating on it and like just hating on it in general, and then people were picking apart that LeBron checked in with him at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like that's a cool photo moment.
They probably like, set it up. Yeah, they definitely had that in the plan. They definitely
set it up that way.
It wasn't like LeBron like, at the last minute was like no. Yeah.
I guarantee you LeBron like, you know, subbed out like normal time and they were going to check Bronny in, and LeBron probably just got up and checked himself in.
Oh, I bet it was part of the plan. I bet JJ.
Like, yeah, it's definitely planned.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, cool situation, cool photo op. Yeah, now send him to the G League.
One of the coolest things probably for a dad ever has got to be like walking on to the NBA court for the first time when your son does that. Like when your son reaches his dream of playing in an NBA game and you get to go on the court with him at the same time. Like,
shouldn't
come on.
Be feasible just with how many years
and
how old he is. Like, but he's still doing it.
I don't care how big a LeBron hater you are. You got to say that's pretty cool. But he'll be in the G League soon enough. He's just not.
No doubt.
But, you know, maybe he can become a good player. I've been watching that Starting Five documentary, and I just got through the part where, Bronny had the cardiac arrest. And, they were talking about that. It's still pretty crazy that only happened like a year ago. And pretty much just knocked him out for a whole year. So I definitely wish he would have stayed one more year in college. That would have probably been better.
Speaking of that, Tech basketball starts in 2 weeks, guys.
That's the other final shot I had. 13 days, I think, from today. Big 12 media days for college basketball in Kansas City was today. So Darian Williams, Chance McMillie, and Dr. K, Colonel Walton, were the three representatives for the Red Raiders. Grant McCaslin, of course. And so getting all closer. Monday is the block party. Dustin, are you going to make the block party?
No, I don't think so. I'm still interested to see how it goes and what happens.
I hope it's streamed, and I hope it's streamed, or at least I hope they get. I know they'll get some really good content out of it. I'm very curious to see what the court looks like. I think it's going to be kind of a shit show. Not going to lie. So kind of like let's let them do it this first year and get some of the kinks out, and then maybe next year I'll try to go, but. Nonetheless, it'll be cool to see the videos and everything that goes on and the fanfare that's put on for everybody. And then
I don't know, maybe now I'm thinking about it, maybe they're going to have like Broadway and University blocked off and use like that intersection that's way bigger, and you can get people on more sides of the court. So that's what I'm worried about, is just like the people on the streets type deal. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's enough space.
The spacing for it. So maybe they're using one of those intersections and maybe
that's
that
a good idea.
By,
I hope they're talking
to you. I just
thought
about that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
would
be a much better idea.
They haven't reached out yet, but I'll let them know.
Yeah. We'll be very curious. Very, very curious to see how that goes. But excited. We got our season tickets in now. And so ready to go for basketball season. And, of course, once it gets closer, we'll start diving into the team a little bit more. But for right now, we're focused on beating the TCU Horned Frogs this Saturday, and so that'll do it for us here at Tailgate Talks this week. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. I hope you guys enjoy your tailgates, your Halloween parties, whatever you got going on this weekend, and as always, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate. Peace.